Oh, this is César Arada. We are Monday, December the 12th. It's 7:54, and I'm answering the questions of Federico Calvi about Protei. So Protei is an open hardware selling robot that is aimed primarily at collecting oil spills. But being an open hardware project, many other applications are open. So it's an open source project. We have an international community developing the technology, and so I'm going to answer the questions of Federico. So first, I apologize for answering by audio because I don't have a lot of time right now. So I think it would be faster for me to answer this way, and probably more lively and accurate. So the first question is: what are your major sources of financing? Do you receive funds from any large organization? Do you still want to use the grassroots approach to financing in the future, like Kickstarter? Question mark. Okay, so the project has had different sources of funding. So at the beginning, it was my own personal saving. So before I knew the technology was valid, I developed the technology in a garage, and so I was just using my own money and building the first prototypes. So I built Protei 1, 2, and 3 in New Orleans near the Lake Pontchartrain in a friend's garage, up to the point that I knew the technology was viable because it proved to be superior to what I knew about other technologies. So I thought it was interesting enough to publicize it. So I made small videos, published them on a small website, gave a name to the project. So at that point, there was personal funding, but then I thought, and I realized that the physics attached to the project were too big for myself alone to handle, and I wanted the project to remain open source, so I decided to publicize it as fast as possible and get some people interested in the same topic. So I called people who I thought would be interested in technology, and we started financing on Kickstarter. So we decided to launch on Kickstarter, but at the same time, I was being approached by another institution called the V2, the Institute for the Unstable Media in Rotterdam, and I kind of made a bet with them. The bet was that if I managed to get funding through Kickstarter, which I was aiming at $30,000, then they will match fund what I found. And at the same time, I was asking them to be a backup plan if, say, up to 30% of the capital that we were raising was not met. So it was an audacious bet, also somehow a little bit risky, but I think it was very, very worth it. And in a couple of weeks, it proved to be the winning solution because we managed to fundraise about, say, $15,000. Dollars, and the V2 decided to match fund whatever the outcome of the funding will be. So there was a combination of grassroots fundraising plus institutional match fund capital matchmaking. So at that point at the end of April, after a very active campaign, we managed to fundraise $33,000 on Kickstarter, so we went a bit above our initial target, and we had an institution that was up to back us and to also put at least the same amount in work of their own employee to support development of Protei. So we had $33,000 of hard cash and plus $30,000 of work of a big institution well established in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. So at that point we had a virtual budget of more than $70,000. So we developed this prototype. And out of the $70,000, only $10,000 was actually allocated to the making of the prototype, and the rest were only human costs. It means also like renting a house, feeding the people, getting the insurance, paying the engineers a fee, the transport, some communication budget. And so the prototype number 7, the cost of the hardware, so the motors and the materials, is less than 10,000 euros. So 10,000 euros is ridiculous. It's a ridiculously small budget when it comes to robotics. When you think that some, you know, sensor bay or like or some sensors alone cost $2,000. So we managed to build Protée 6 with a very, very reduced budget. Some money was still left at the end. I think we still had 1,500 at the end. And so that money was used to mostly refund the material that the contributors of Protée came to give. So the budget of the fabrication is all gone now. So now, so that's the situation in September 2011. So we had this Protée 6 prototype, which is 3 meters. And so the V2 finished to finance the development of Protée. And now we are looking at the next round of funding. So I am writing currently, I'm right now in the last steps of writing a business plan. And we are looking into fundraising, of course. And this time the budget we're looking at is about 5 times bigger for a year, for yearly development, so, at least 5 times. So it means that in the year 2011, we had 70,000 euro to be operating. So like work and material and transport and insurance, everything included. And for the next year, for 2012, we are looking at least 500,000 euro to be operating to develop 2 products. So Protée number 1, Protée 1 meter, remote control, and Protée 6 meter. So basically a sailing boat in which a human being could be hosted. We are, of course, still looking at the grassroots way of funding, also through donations. But we are also looking at like large sponsoring, because our project has a very good visibility. And also we are looking at cost of manufacturing, so sales, and also perhaps we start the first operations. So not only build units, but starting operating them and generating revenue from the work that the machines are doing. There's also financing through the commercialization of byproducts. So our project has very good aura, and many people want to have their name associated with it or feel like they're part of it. So we will sell our publications printed on paper, and also the hoodies and any like derivative product or merchandise that can come with the technology. So I would say that at the beginning it was a private funding from myself, the inventor. Then it became a grassroots movement, and now we're trying to combine the grassroots with the kind of non-profit and academic source of funding. And in the future, we're also looking at investment. And so that's open hardware projects that needs to be structured under 4 administrative structures. The first is the hacker society. So it's an informal, but needs to be kind of formalized socially at least. The second, it's an academic structure. So I'm actually going to be developing a research unit within my university at Goldsmiths University in the UK to be supporting and being able to receive like research grants. The third structure that we need is a profit, because actually profit organizations are, it's easier to get sponsorship. It's really good to have a profit organization to receive sponsorship and also to work effectively and make bills and being able to do some consulting work. And maybe and the fourth structure is a non-profit. So we are able to receive tax-deductible donation and also make sure that the IP is protected by a board of non-profit-driven motivation. So that's the 4 administrative structure. First, like an informal DIY hacker like forum. Second, a academic research unit. Third, a profit, and fourth, a non-profit structure. So it's one project which has 4 administrative structures, and therefore can accept 4 sources, 4 different like types of large financing. So, what's your actual vision? Second question, sorry. What's your actual vision? Are you planning to produce Protée yourself and sell them one day? So yes, so the actual vision is to, so we have long-term vision. So in we have like a 5 years, 3 years, 1 year vision. So 5 years, we'd like to be able to have a big environmental impact. So the purpose of Proté and the way we're organizing our business plan is to reverse the normal order of priority of a business plan. So a normal business plan, the order of priority would be 1, profit, 2, technology, because this is what you made the money with, 3, people, like the workforce, and 4, nature or like environmental or green technology, which usually like helps you like receive you know, like tax incentives, and you know, like you can get some, you can make the product higher if you can market it as a green product. So it's like labeling. And what we're doing at Proté is to reverse this order of priority, which is normally money, technology, people, nature. We do the opposite. We do nature as the main priority, then people, then technology, and then the profit is the last priority. So this is what guides our like economic structure and the way we govern internally, and also our strategy. So so that means that we want to maximize the environmental impact. Secondly, the social impact. Firstly, the technological advances that we produce, and fourthly, we want to of course make profit to be sustainable as a business. So to do this, we came up with we are coming up right now with a strategy of developing Proté under different formats. So Proté 1 meter as a remote control boat, Proté 1 meter. Not as remote control, but with Arduino and Android that could be modified by, you know, like DIY communities and or operated by university to do like ocean sensing. And a Proté 6 meter, so like a larger Proté in which a human being could be inside and actually could be sailing. So that would be for us the best way to explore the physical properties of these elements, a human being still being an excellent ratio of weight, computation capacity, and actuation power. And sensing, of course, and then a Proté 6 meter, which would be we replace the human being by a battery, motor, sensor, and microchip, like onboard computer. So that's our goal, and the goal of this is to develop a Proté 1 meter that's specifically for ocean sensing, and Proté 6 meter, which is specifically for ocean cleaning or carrying heavier payload, scientific payload. So the main target is still it's environmental, but in the process of having developing this environmental technology, we think that it is a good idea to diversify and get the support of toy making communities, as well as DIY and hobbyists, as well as the sailing community, which is extremely powerful, and eventually the ocean science community will benefit most from the development of that technology. So we plan to produce prototypes ourselves, of course, so within the Proté core team. But because we publicize our research and like results, we hope that the Proté will be taken on by a larger community pretty soon after. And if we want to sell them, of course, we want to sell them. And we're starting to have a clearer idea of the shelf value, so how much it will be sold in store, what's the margin we're making, and how much of that margin is aimed at our growth, the growth of our capital, the growth of our individual team member, and also investors. Reducing what's the strategy to reduce the manufacturing costs, delivery costs, and environmental impact, of course. So that's the vision, is to diversify to reach environmental applications. Third question, what is the potential of the idea in your opinion, and what are your specific goals? So the potential of the idea is, I personally think it's enormous, because we are on the verge of discovering like an entire new way of sailing. So we've been sailing for thousands of years, and we have not the material, the mechanical and computational capacity to build these kind of complex devices that could dramatically, to my perspective, enhance navigation properties of sailing vessels. Whatever advances that we do, we might not create an immediate revolution, but I believe that this kind of technology can really contribute humbly to the we can really work humbly to contribute great, to make great change into the industry, and also how we think our relationship to mechanical engineering, in particular for ocean science. So in ocean science, there's most structures are like big steel structures, and our structure is like small and flexible. And I really think it's a very different approach, and I hope that that can be basically like the launch of new families of ocean engineering, like in terms of instrumentation and equipment. So that's for the ocean science, but I think also for the sailing industry and also for the toy industry. I think on all these levels we can really contribute a lot. First question, Prote is open hardware. What is the legal situation? What legal rights does open hardware licensing enjoy? What a future perspective. So what is, maybe for people who don't know, I should give a tiny bit of background on open hardware. So open hardware is a brand new, open hardware has been existing since many, many years, actually, the idea. And it's been used primarily in the realm of electronics, and now it's been expanded to other like mechanical devices. The first open hardware summit has been held in 2010 in Queens, in New York. And so I was there for the first summit. We just had a second summit this year, 2011, and Prote was represented and actually taken as one of the example of what is open hardware. And even though we are tinkering around the definition of what is open hardware, there seem to be a consensus of trying to develop an intellectual property system that will really power collaboration, but at the same time create some legal protection for the people who participate that movement, which means that basically creating revenue and protecting industries, like larger industries, to basically steal or stop smaller emerging inventors to develop their own technology. So open hardware, for me, I try to summarize this into three points as a positive right. So the three positive rights are, anyone is free or even invited to use, modify, and distribute the technology. In our case for Prote, for free, which means that you can use, so you can just like replicate our drawings, you can modify, you can enhance the technology, and you can distribute, means that you can even sell Prote yourself if you manufacture them. The only obligations, so the kind of negative rights, are that you have to credit Prote, so if you're using. And the second thing is that you have to share back with the community. So there's two things, credit and share back with the community, which means that you have to acknowledge that you have been using Prote, basic technology. And second, you have to share back with the community. It means that you have to, whatever you take or whatever you build on top of our technology, you need to give it back because, you know, you built on top of our stuff, so of course, if you use our stuff for free, then we also should have access to your stuff. Doesn't mean that we take your machines, but at least you need to acknowledge the rest of the community what the improvement you made. So the legal situation for us right now is that we are setting ourselves as these four different administrative structures. We have a trademark on the name Prote. And we are in the process, we're publicizing all the time our research, and we are looking into the compatibility between actually owning, so having some kind of patent on the technology, and still ensuring that the technology is released as an open source technology. The fact is that when it comes to talk to like industry investors, they want to be sure that the idea not only is protected, but that we are going to be able to continue working with this technology in case somebody would like to patent it. If somebody else has decided to patent it, then they could legally stop you from doing your own research. So in order to do this, it seems kind of counterintuitive, but if we patent our CFO technology and then release it as open source, then might be a way to both conciliate the interests of investors and who would understand why we're developing it and kind of working with the old model, as well as working with the new model, which is, you know, based on sharing. The other thing is also for my personal protection. So I basically invented the Protea technology and suggested a shape-shifting hull as I was building the first prototype alone, you know, in this garage. And I want to make sure as well that for the first years, at least, I keep some kind of control on how we develop the technology, because I believe that any open source project needs some leadership and, you know, some direction. I mean, even if it's open, doesn't mean that there's no direction. So I think it's important that I also give, you know, directions to people in the team and trying to make somehow a living out of this. And so, for example, if we receive investment and I don't have any ownership, then I can't have a percentage or shares within the future company that we're going to form. Because right now I don't have any money, so it's important for me to have shares, and the shares can be evaluated if you own a patent, especially, because it's a more tangible asset. So we're trying to see how we can conciliate the personal interest of the people who are going to be on board, the investors, as well as the larger community, the open hardware community, and it seems that we are finding a good structure for this. What is the current status of your collaboration with external organizations, both profit and non-profit? So right now and the next question is probably tied into this, so have you been approached by Big Oil about your project yet, or have you approached them? If so, what are the thought feedback? Do you believe that all companies will be interested in this technology and be willing to purchase it? So to answer this question, so yes, we have been approached by large oil companies several times. And before we tell them, yes, we want to work with you, we are again working on our business plan and trying to formalize our intellectual property structure in order to protect ourselves from being sabotage from other larger companies, which have an enormous economic power. We have very, very little right now. So that means uncompromising intellectual property setup, as well as a clear retro planning towards a clearly defined environmental, social, technological, and economical objectives, like stated in the beginning. And so that's what we're doing. So before we tell them yes, give us, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, because this is what they are basically proposing us, we would like to make sure that we know exactly what we want. And I know what I would like to see, how I'd like to see Prote progress in the next years in order to protect its open hardware integrity and to serve best the community. And So this is where we are now. We have been approached by these companies. Technology is getting ready, and we need to tell them how we're going to develop so they can invest in us. So right now we will not be taking collaborators, people who are interested in owning the IP. We are interested in working, for example, with large companies who are interested in the image, which means sponsorship. So we get money not from people who buy into our intellectual or hardware like production, buying our machines, but more into people who understand the value of the development of technology and want to be associated with the image. So that's the first people we'll be looking into, and then of course then we will have the investors, so people who want to buy into the potential profits that this structure will be making. So we have all these like different partners that we're going to have in the future, and we're preparing like basically like how do you say, like a projection of the growth of the company and the nonprofit, the margin that we hope to be making, and like how much everybody is going to get out of the development of this technology to, you know, make sure that everybody is on the same frequency. Okay, what do you consider to be your closest competitor? What are the alternative technologies that solve that same problem? Why do you think your solution is viable, and how is it superior to alternatives? So, when we are talking about competitors, I would always... I don't have competitors. I only have collaborators. That's my way of thinking. So, there are about 10 groups which are seriously undertaking autonomous sailing at small scale, and there is a lot of other groups, especially in universities or independent labs, that are working on autonomous remote sensing, especially with torpedo-shaped like submarine, which have like onboard equipment. So, just to give you like an overview of the kind of challenge that we're facing. So we've been on the moon, but nobody ever crossed an ocean with a sailing robot. So this is how difficult sailing autonomously on very, very long distances. And currently there's only, to my knowledge, there have been one crossing of the Atlantic with a torpedo-shaped, how do you say, like small submarines to make like ocean sensing by Rutgers, the University of Rutgers. And so that was 2 years ago. And currently there is one, right now there is a crossing attempted by the Wave Glider. So it's a product of the company called Liquid Robotics. And I think they're trying to cross the Pacific with fleets of autonomous wave-powered moving drones. So the technology is very, very, very exciting. We are really like following their progress. And so basically the machine is not wind-powered, but wave-powered. So you have a module on the surface and you have a module under the surface. The wing is under the surface and there's a line between the float and the wing. So the float goes up and down. It pulls on the line, and that motion, this vertical motion, is converted by the wings into horizontal motion. So it makes the machine move. So that's a very nice machine. You have to check it out. And so the machine technically is dependent on wave activity, but it's very durable because there's no like appendage or like sail like ours, and it can sail. It has been proven very, very efficient. It's been sailing for thousands and thousands of miles since a couple of years. But the technology, I think, is quite more expensive. So I think a unit is like $100,000 for universities. And the cost of operation as well is quite high. The advantage of sailing is that it's probably much faster. And sailing, we have been sailing for thousands of years, so still there's many things that we know from sailing that we can, you know, take inspiration from previous work. And also in terms of a shape-shifting hull, there's lots in aerodynamics with the advances of aeronautics, so planes, that we also can learn from shape-shifting hull. And also, of course, the recent development in the last 20 years of the hydrofoils, so there's lots of things that we have as background research to, you know, base our shape-shifting or curved hull technological development to make it like a powerful product. I personally think that our technology will eventually be superior to the torpedo-shaped submarines or wave glider, because the wind power really can take us very, very, very far for very cheap, very fast. We, of course, depend on a renewable energy, so we will be stopped if there's no more wind. But still, I really think it's... the Americas have been discovered, between brackets, by Europeans. It's wind-powered, like most of the I mean, we've been selling forever, so it's just confidence in like natural development of like sailing technology, basically. I don't see how we couldn't be competitive or how this technology would not be efficient, because it's been efficient for thousands of years, and especially now with the increase of like oil price, we have a renewed interest in this kind of propulsion systems. So I of course we have some figures of like how much oil we can collect. We have some ideas of how much money we can save on like competing technologies, and so we think our solution is viable. What are the major issues with the current prototypes? In other words, what needs to be done to get prototype ready for the market? Which organization resources are most important? Financing, specialized expertise, manpower, infrastructure. So the main issue with the current prototype is to is to understand better what articulated hull means. So there's tons. There's at least five groundbreaking properties that comes with a shape shifting hull. So the first is that and these are like research questions that we haven't fully answered yet. The first is, how much more control do we get on sailing? How much do we have a better control on the direction? And is it a more tolerant and more like flexible way of directing a boat? The second is it going to help us tack or jibe more efficiently? It's very likely so, because if we move the nose or the anchor point of the jib, for example, in relation to the mast, we catch the wind from the other side faster. So we might enhance the general maneuvering of a boat and stability. The third is, if we go at sufficient speed, the curved hull, does it create lateral lift? So that's another huge question. And that could really open to huge progresses into high-speed sailing, because we could probably sail closer to the wind, for instance, or further, but creating more relative motion to natural forces, so that creates like stronger power and more potential for high-speed applications. Another important thing is, do we sail better? Sorry. Because the hull is flexible, therefore we don't like get hit by waves, which means that we don't lose all this energy for moving forward in the impact of waves. And the fifth point is, if the hull, because we don't have appendages, so we don't have a centerboard nor a rudder, so we don't create turbulences with these like big things that stick out. So we have like one continuous line and the whole thing curves. So we probably create less turbulences as well, which are really like positive factors for enhancing the flow and perhaps the speed of a sailing unit, which would have this kind of shape. So these are the major issues or research questions. So each of these issues basically raise questions about special materials. So we have lots of issues with the resistance of materials or what we build prototype out of. And of course we have control issues, because like I was saying before, like sailing an autonomous sailing robot is extremely difficult. And another thing is the power issue. So because we have a lot of motors and the technology is very new, we still haven't optimized our energetic consumption, and so this is one of the main like issues. So right now we're trying to really focus on mechanics, and once we have optimized the mechanics, then we'll work on optimizing the energy bill. So we divided our questions into like smaller disciplines: mechanics, physics, electronics, and artificial intelligence. So that's our like five R&D divisions, and each of these are addressing issues. So to get prototype ready for the market. Okay, so like I was saying before, we're trying to develop two different sizes and four products: Prote 1 meter remote control, Prote 1 meter with Arduino and Android, so with a mobile phone inside for like far-reaching and like GPS guided operation. Prote 6 meter manned, so in which a human being will be, so trying to push the sailing boat to its extremes, capacity. So we explore the physics, especially of the machine, and Protest 6 meter autonomous. So Arduino plus Android. So using the same AI on board of the biggest unit. So each of these are different products, and they have different agendas and different like constraints, like financial constraints or like industries associated to the manufacturing of each of these units. So that's it's a complex project. So but right now we are trying to focus on Protea 1 meter. So trying to first market a toy. So that's the first thing. Is going to conquer and set up like manufacturing for like toy shaped or toy sized Protea. So that's going to be the first market that we're going to be looking at. The second market is the sailing market, so the leisure of salesmen, so people who go to build a Protea that is big enough to have somebody going inside. And so it's not the toy manufacturing or distribution we're looking at, but basically like the kayak and outdoor sports and this kind of manufacturing facility and retailing points that we're looking at. So that would be the first steps towards more scientific applications. And because it's an open hardware, all these different people can work together. But I think to do reliable production, we are going to anchor our manufacturing into toy industry and sailboat manufacturing industry. So these are also the first markets. Which organizational resources are most important? Financing, specialized expertise, manpower, infrastructure. So I think we are at the stage where we badly need proofs of concept for each of the product that we want to launch. So the first infrastructure we need is manufacturing or like prototyping infrastructure. Then this prototyping infrastructure needs to be supported by a strong administrative infrastructure to secure the IP and to get access to like bigger sources of financing. And so that's already a structure of about 10 people. So maybe like 3 admins and say 7 researchers for the science side and prototyping. And so that's the main resources for now. And in the future, we don't want necessarily to incorporate within ourselves like heavy manufacturing. So we want to work in an appropriate technology way, which means that we develop the technology and then we get it executed or made as close as possible to the point of delivery. So we use local material and also like local manpower. And so like this, we reduce the transport, impact, and we also use like local materials. So basically what we're trying to develop is really a platform, and then it will be a very distributed manufacturing structure. And because we need, if you develop a new technology, also the cost of maintenance and the client's service to client is very, very important. We want to have many different places where we can have people repairing our units. So it's very important that we have local antennas. So this is kind of our like deployment plan. Do you have ideas for recycling the oil after cleanup? What are the standards procedures for disposal or recycling at the moment? Are you aware of the other projects concerned with this aspect? If so, do you plan to coordinating efforts? So first of all, yes, of course, we have ideas of where the oil is going to go after we've collected it, but it's very important to stress that this is not our specialty. So we are producing an autonomous sailing robot that is pulling oil sorbent. And so the oil sorbent, we are not going to engineer materials to absorb oil. This is not our specialty. Our specialty is the propulsion system or the navigation system. So what I mean this is that we are powering the general application and we're going to be collecting oil, but we are not focusing our R&D effort on the treatment of these contaminated booms. There are hundreds of other companies doing this professionally since forever. So I'm just going to list really briefly the different processes through which the oil that is collected can go through to be, neutralized, between brackets. So the first is if we're using a sorbent that we can reuse, and that's the best case scenario, I'm going to go from best to worst. The first is that we can absorb oil, bring it back to the shore, press, so just like a sponge, and extract the oil. And so this oil can be, you know, used in normal like separation columns afterwards, and, you know, refined basically for what it's been extracted for, or spilled accidentally, and we can make a positive use out of it. The second possibility is to extract the oil chemically from the oil booms. The third, to my knowledge, is that you can burn the boom, so you can extract the the heat energy from the booms into energy facility, just like you would burn waste, basically. The fourth is that you can, and the fourth is, which is probably the worst, that many, and it's many times what's being done, is that you can dispose of the booms. So depending on what type of boom, it really would change like the chain of command, and also the economic reality of how much money can be done out of this collected oil. So we are not going to be providing this services, at least not at the beginning, because we are, like I said, we focus on the propulsion. So yes, we'll be collaborating with boom makers and recycling facilities. So many people ask us, so what do you do when you collect the oil? So there's two large possibilities. Either we go back to the shore, so we go back to the harbor, or we also have a protei vessel, so like a mother vessel that'll be collecting the proteis. So the advantage of having a mother vessel is that we can bring the mother vessel close to the point of collection, and reduce greatly the commuting time from collecting points to so like the oil spill to the place where we store the oil that is collected. And yes, so we know a lot of other projects which are concerned with this aspect. You have a nice selection of these technology which have been competing for the XPRIZE oil cleanup. So you should check out XPRIZE oil cleanup, and you will see I think 10 excellent technology for retrieving large amounts of oil in like a swimming pool kind of setup. So we did not compete to this scheme, first because we didn't have the money to apply, because actually you had to pay quite a big amount of money to just register. The second is because the testing facility was a swimming pool, and it's not big enough for us to navigate and you know, to sail up the wind. So even if our technology was competitive, we could not prove it in the way the competition is set up. And and so, yeah, so we really focus right now on developing our technology for the mechanics, and then the physics, and then the artificial intelligence control and the electronic setup. And once we start to have our operations, we will then look into like how this technology can be contributing better to the cleanup effort. So what's happening is that protei's, the aim is to collect oil spill, and collecting oil spill is an extremely, extremely difficult task, because it's the chemistry is, it's very aggressive, the ocean environment is very bad. Very, very oftentimes when you have an oil spill, it's associated with like bad weather conditions. That was proven recently in New Zealand, like this huge shipped wreck, and was leaking oil because it got caught into a storm, and etc. So that means that we need to have like high control over the, and like high reliability of our applications. So collecting oil is kind of the ultimate goal, and it's probably the hardest target we could ever take, because it's also, it burns, it's explosive. I mean, there's so many constraints. So in the meantime, we, to access this very, very difficult goal, that's why we put many milestones or intermediary technology. And one big milestone is going to be sensing. So Protea as a sensing ocean device, and then as a cleaning ocean device. And so these are like how we are really looking at developing the technology. First develop a 1 meter remote control, then Arduino and Android, which will be mostly doing sensing work. And then in parallel, developing a 6 meter, which will be sailing, and with a bigger sail surface, that will have more power and being able to carry cleanup operations. And we are not looking at building Protea bigger and bigger in size, but more like to enhance our control of multiple units. So that's the larger strategy. And I think I've answered all your questions. So it took me about 30-40 minutes, and it probably would have taken me a lot more time if I was writing. So I hope you're satisfied with the answer. You can ask me more questions if you want by email, and I might answer them again by audio if they have this level of complexity. So I wish you good luck for the writing of your article. And like I was saying, my condition was that you are a bit like Open Hardware. First, you acknowledge the author, of course. And the second is that you tell me what you're doing with this information I'm giving to you. So if you publish an article, I would just, if you could just basically send me the link. that's not very hard. So that's the kind of condition that we asking. And so I guess that's also means that we would love to be able to publish or republish what you are writing on top of our technology if you do. If you're using our image, then we need to have access to the image that you make of us. Okay, I hope that's clear. If you have any more questions, please feel free to call me back. Goodbye.